Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Michael Janz from Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency or brokerage. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the movers and the shakers, the geniuses and the innovators in the insurance industry, discern and deconstruct what they're doing so that you can accelerate your business. And I am pleased and thrilled to introduce to you our guest conversation for today. Longtime friend of mine, one of the highest rated speakers at our insurance marketing bootcamp many years ago. He speaks with passion, but also practicality, Dan King. If you don't know Dan, he's got 40 years of experience in the insurance industry with Travelers in a number of positions, underwriter, agency manager, regional VP of personal lines in New York prior to assuming his role where I know him as director of agency development. In this position, he focused primarily on helping independent agents grow long-term profitably. He focuses generally on business planning, job design, mergers and acquisitions, perpetuation planning, and staff compensation plans. You've probably seen his byline in trade magazines throughout the country, or perhaps you've seen him speak. So in a moment, I'm going to introduce you to this conversation with Dan, where he covers things like compensating for long-term profitability, the distinction between customer service and customer experience, critical analytics you need to be tracking, changes in hiring practice, and practices and behaviors that he's witnessed in the industry, and advice, obviously, that he has on these things. Here's one very quick message that I want to give to our listeners. As I mentioned, it's our job to find the geniuses and the innovators in the industry. You might be able to help us. And so if you know somebody who could be a valuable guest that has a message that makes a difference to our listeners, look me up on LinkedIn, Michael Janz on LinkedIn. Send me a message and let me know who you're thinking of, and we'll talk about that. So now, without further ado, I want to introduce to you my very good friend, one of the good people in the industry, Dan King. Hello, Dan King. So pleased that you could join us. How are you today?
I'm good, Michael. How's everything out west?
Everything is right now smoky, but yeah, or Oregon is on fire, and Bend is the unfortunate recipient of an incredible, I mean, literally an incredible amount of smoke. But that aside, other than that, everything out west is great. Thank you so much.
Nice.
Dan, we have a lot of ground to cover, and I want to just dive right into it. You've been doing this you've been working with agencies for a long time and continue to do so. And so I have a few key questions that I think you're a subject matter expert on. All right.
I'm nice that you think of that of me.
Well, you know that I do. All righty. So one of the issues that arises frequently, and I know that you have addressed over time, is how an agency balances their long-term profitability with their current or contemporary expenses. And of course, marketing is an investment in the future. And sometimes people feel like, well, gosh, you know, I have to be able to control my margins, my bottom line, my EBITDA. So on that issue, how do you compensate for long-term profitable growth? How do you pay for that now? What are your thoughts and insights on that?
You know what's interesting about that, Michael? That is a topic that probably is one of the number one or two that I get from agencies. They hit me with that question constantly. How should I be paying my staff? How should I be looking at the numbers? And what's really interesting, so many agencies that I come across today may not actually be paying their staff something additional for writing business. Now, this number has decreased over the years, and if I had to pull a percentage, I'd say there are probably a good 20 or 30% that are still not recognizing new business production and paying that account manager or that CSR.
Uh-huh.
But the bulk of them have moved towards compensation for writing new business. Now, what I find very disturbing about that is that oftentimes there is no differentiation between compensation for a monoline piece of business and a rounded piece of business.
Got it. Yet, okay.
When I ask an owner what's more important to them, they always tell me rounded business is more important. And oftentimes they will give me 8 to 10 reasons why it is better for their agency to have rounded business.
Right. Okay.
And
you'll get no argument from me on that one. So.
Right. And so my response back to them is, if it's 8 or 10 reasons more important for your agency, why would you pay the same thing that you do for a monoline?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And normally there's a real gap in the conversation. It gets real quiet. And they said, I had never really thought about it like that.
Got it. Okay. So what kind of models do you like? What sort of compensation models? What do you encourage agency principals or managers to do for what you would call a CSR, account manager compensation, when they write new business?
You know, depending on where they are today, and I'll take a typical number that I see often. Often they're paying an additional anywhere from $10 to $25 for a piece of new business.
Okay.
I encourage agencies, if that's where that number happens to be, and I really try to focus on where an agency is and really make the plan fit their situation. But assuming the numbers that I just mentioned, I tell them to, at the bare minimum, double it for rounded business.
Got it.
You could even triple it and not lose money. Now, often an owner will tell me, gosh, that seems like a lot of money. I said, it is a lot of money. But what we want to do here is we want to change behavior. Because I'd like to think that when that person is talking to that prospect or your existing client, that rounded is going to come to mind, because they're thinking, even selfishly, gosh, I will make 3 times as much if I round this as opposed to just writing one line. I have done the math 1,000 times. I have never found a way that an agency can lose if that business is rounded, when we know the upside of rounded business is better retention, a better referral, a better client relationship, better for the client. Too many good things come from rounded business. We've always heard that business that is rounded is more profitable than monoline business. So then contingencies could certainly be on the rise.
Uh-huh.
Dan, the opposite side, yes, Mike.
Well, so I want to just focus on this point, and I'll ask you, I'll phrase this in the form of a question. Would you agree that the difference between a piece of monoline business and a new piece of rounded business is the difference between having a policy and gaining a customer?
I would even take it a step further.
Okay.
I believe it's the difference of having a policy and gaining a client.
Got it.
I'm also encouraging agencies to try to move away from the word customer. Not that I think that they think any less of that individual.
Right.
But when I know the consumer's opinion of our industry, I would rather hear them begin to utilize the word like client, because I think it mirrors other industries they truly align with, like financial planners and accountants.
Right. Uh-huh.
So I'm a huge proponent of the word client.
Okay. So
I agree with you totally.
So part of what you're saying, I think part of the principle that we're agreeing on here is that from the customer's experience, having almost sounds superficial to put it this way, but having a deeper relationship or having the 2 or 3 policies instead of the 1 policy, it changes their attitude and then their behavior. It changes the experience that they have in relationship to that agency, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The customer experience is vastly different for a person with 2 or 3 lines of coverage versus 1.
Let's talk a little bit about the concept of customer experience versus what I think the industry has focused on for a long time, good customer service. How do you draw a distinction between customer service and customer experience?
That's a great, great question. And what's really interesting about that, for years, the title that we all became very accustomed to was CSR. I started seeing agencies move away from that and go to client manager or account manager, and I think those are more apropos titles for where the environment is taking our business. Customer service will always be a huge part of what agencies do. However, I view customer service, you know, the ancillary tasks like add a car, delete a car, change a driver, send out a an ID card. These have become very much like vitamin tablets.
Right.
This is really that's the daily minimum requirement.
Okay.
And there is nothing really special about doing those things. Customer experience is taking that a step further, where you are doing something more for that client and hopefully starting with the sales process, but certainly after the sale. And it's got to be something that's significant, that is a differentiator, that helps you begin to be viewed differently by that client.
Okay. So first of all, Dan, you know that this is music to my ears. As well as the co-founder of Agency Revolution, that was one of our, that was part of our vision to help agents use technology to guide the customer experience. Now, what I'm going to ask you is, what do you see agents, some agencies doing that are exciting now in the area of customer experience?
I think one of the things, I think the, again, probably at, on the lower level, I believe agencies need to be in touch with their client base 4 to 6 times a year proactively outside of bills and renewals.
Mm-hmm.
I like it when I see this contact is not necessarily a salesy contact, because I think that hurts the process. I like it when it's tied to something either in their community or something that they're doing that they keep their client base apprised of. I have encouraged a number of agencies to do some things tied to a certain time of year, simply because maybe it will be remembered or people will actually look forward to it. So I have a number of agencies who will actually do things when the clocks change, when we spring ahead and when we fall back. They will send out a email blast to all their clients on something, again,
right,
that's about clients, something that's informative, something that's not about the sale, but something that lets them know that they want to stay in touch and make their lives better.
Dan, it's your observation that based on the behavior of other industries that today's consumer expects to be delivered value beyond the product itself?
Oh, that is so interesting. I'm laughing simply because that is so entirely true. What has happened is the consumer, where the consumer's head is today, has changed many industries. When I think of all the other industries and how they impact a consumer today, when I look at Amazon, when I look at Southwest, when I look at Apple, when I look at Marriott, and how they interface with today's consumer, expectations have changed.
Right. Okay. So what do you think, what are the expectations of today's insurance consumer?
Here's where it starts getting scary, because today's insurance consumer is quite demanding. And this isn't just me talking. This is what I hear from the hundreds of agencies that I work with and interface with. They've become more demanding. They have more options available to them. And by having more options, that helps in being a more demanding individual. They have increased expectations. And I got to say, just from a selfish standpoint, I've become one of those consumers.
Right, okay.
You know, with the amount of travel that I was doing about 100,000 air miles a year. When I would get on a plane and it didn't have a USB port in my seat, I wanted another plane brought out.
Right. Okay.
I had gotten to the point where I kind of expected that. It made my life simpler. The consumer is no different. When they get the kind of service and interaction from an Amazon, from a Southwest, from a Marriott, they kind of expect that same type of rapport, whether they're buying insurance or buying clothing or buying shoes. And unfortunately, we have been very slow to catch on to that trend. However, many, many more agencies are beginning to look into customer experience and beginning to implement those things that put them in a different light from their peers.
I think you're right about that. I think you're right that agents are beginning to wake up to that. It's an imperative in today's business to do business in today's economy. The consumer's connected, and they expect you to be connected and be delivering things to them.
Absolutely. And what's really interesting about those consumers today, we're even segmenting consumers. You know, there's the baby boomers. There are the millennials.
Right.
They're different types of consumers, and oftentimes they want to consume in a different fashion. So it's really incumbent upon agents to kind of be aware of what are those nuances that they need to address to make sure they're able to attract and maintain those folks.
Got it. All right. I want to put the focus back on the agent right now for a moment.
Sure.
I know you've got a handful of sermons that you deliver over and over and over again. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to preach on this one for a moment. One of the challenges that agencies have is knowing, what do I need to pay attention to? What matters so much that that's something I've got to measure and perform certain analytics on? I know that's a
great question.
I know it's a critical issue for you. What are you saying to agencies today about their analytics?
And what's really interesting, I will. If this were a sermon, I would say the sermon for today is: if you cannot measure it, you can't manage it.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell agencies all the time that the analytics—they have always been important in our business. However, they are far more important today because there are so many different ways, of growing your business. But the only way you can tap into those and take advantage of those things is to know the numbers. So oftentimes when agencies ask me, well, Dan, what numbers should I be looking at? What should I be measuring? I give them a kind of laundry list of those things that are important for an agency owner to know about their business, an owner or manager of a department. They need to know their source to sale. They need to know and they need to track that. Where is business coming from? In what numbers and what the close rate is. Agencies frequently tell me the one commodity they don't have enough of is time. And if we're not putting our time and energy and resource into those sources that are generating the biggest bang for a buck, we're backsliding.
Right,
we're making
on
a mistake.
Okay. And by the way, I love the way you tied that back to their time. So because that is the limited resource. So paying attention to the most important things matters. These aren't judgment issues. There's certain things it would seem that are imperative. So what's on the top of your list besides source to sale? And you said both the volume and the closing ratio. What else do you put on the top of the list?
You got to know your number of clients. Your number of clients. And your number of policies per client. I have been in agencies, depending on what the atmosphere is within our business, when
right.
We've been in a very difficult market and premiums are on the rise, an agency will tell me, well, yes, we grew last year, but they're giving me a premium or revenue number. And then when I
right.
ask them, how many clients did you grow last year? Oftentimes, they can't tell me that number. That is not a good set of circumstances.
Not a good thing. Now, so you had said policy per customer. So I'm going to circle back to the conversation we had just a few minutes ago about the importance of rounded accounts. Okay.
Yes.
So would you agree, Dan, that knowing what your policy per customer count is and making the increase of that number a strategic priority is important?
I think it's extremely important. Most of the agencies, and I know this is kind of going out on a limb, but I would dare say 70 to 75% of the independent agencies that I come in contact with, they would be a better, stronger, more profitable agency if they did not grow any new clients.
Okay.
But raise one policy per existing client. They'd be a stronger agency.
Well, certainly their margins would go up, the EBITDA would go up, revenue per customer, you know, I mean, everything is good about that situation, right? They'll end up with higher retention, more referrals, and happier customers, right?
And I don't know one owner that would feel upset about that.
So I've got, on my list, I've got about three or four things that you said that are important. What else do you want to add to that list? Things to be measured.
I would like agencies to know their account round percentage. I would like them to know the amount of new business they write on a monthly basis and what percentage of that business is rounded day one.
Got it. Okay.
I would like agencies to also know their cross-sell percentage. And keep in mind, oftentimes that term cross-sell gets used synonymously with rounded. Those are two different opportunities. And account rounded is within the same discipline, all personal insurance, auto, home, boat, yacht, umbrella.
Got it. Okay.
However, there are huge opportunities in many of the agencies we interface with where they could write more personal insurance for that commercial lines or financial services client.
So sometimes, let's drill down on that one for just a moment. So
sure.
that frequently requires an intra-agency referral. So, in other words, somebody in the personal lines department needs to refer to the commercial lines department or vice versa, right?
Yeah.
How do you incentivize or how do you grease the wheels to make that happen?
Again, that kind of goes back to that compensation piece. I would begin to alter my compensation to recognize when that behavior takes place. That's why I'm such a huge proponent of paying for the behavior, because if the behavior happens, Michael, you just said how many positives come from that positive behavior.
Right.
Here's the great thing about the right compensation plan. If none of those things ever take place, how much did it cost the agency?
Lots, right? I mean,
it cost them lost opportunity,
right.
Yes, but in physical dollars, it didn't cost them one thing.
Right.
And what it may do in the process, it may let them know that maybe they don't have the right people in place.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment, okay?
Sure.
So far, one of the things you've clearly identified is that the field team, the people who are on the team, who are communicating with the customers, they have a lot of influence over the financial success of the agency, right?
Yes.
So filling those seats with people who have the attitude, behavior, the capability, the skill set, or the ability to learn that skill set is of critical importance. How do you see that hiring has changed in recent years to make that kind of team possible?
It's really interesting, and this is one of those things that almost, it was like a light switch, because I would go into agencies, let us say 5-7 years ago, and typically one of the first questions I would get from an owner, do you know anybody looking? Anyone not happy at the agency where they are? We're looking. The day when I go into agencies, they're still looking for people, but no one wants anyone from another agency.
Ah,
when I
okay.
say no one, I'm
right.
saying a large percentage.
Right.
Owners are telling me, don't want to bring over anyone that's got baggage. We don't want to hear out on the floor, well, the way we did it at this agency was. I am seeing more agency owners today, and I totally agree with the movement, begin to invest in bringing in people who fit the mold of what they're looking for, and they will begin to train them in the fashion they deem is best for their agency.
Got it. All right. So, outside the industry, more important than industry experience?
I should say.
Skill, talent, or capability, those are more important than technical experience.
I believe in most owners' eyes, yes, because so many owners are telling me today their charge is to try to move from a service-focused organization to more of a sales-focused organization. So they're looking for folks that have a sales acumen. They have a background that kind of leans towards that, knowing full well that service is never going to be out of the equation. It's a huge, huge part of what they do. But they want people where the sale is not foreign or uncomfortable for them.
Mm-hmm. Got it. All right. Let's focus on the marketing part of the agency here for a moment. What what do you see agencies doing well that help to help them stand out from the crowd, to have a viable value proposition so the market is willing to pay attention to them?
I think a lot of it starts with, one, trying to get a value proposition of their own. I think agencies need to establish a value proposition, because all of their competition, and when I say their, I'm talking the direct writers of the world, their competition all seem to have a value proposition.
Right.
You know, when that client or prospect comes to an agency, they already know most of the value propositions, like save you 15% within 15 minutes.
Right.
They also know that Flo says pick your own price and bundling. I ask agencies, what is your value prop? What makes you different? What makes you the viable choice for an individual? Oftentimes that agency can't tell me.
Got it.
And it's always a real surprise and honor when I hear an agency who has a viable value proposition. They like to share it. It's on their website. It's on their business card. Their staff will share it in a early interaction with a prospect. Those things tend to make a difference, and they make a difference to the consumer, because the consumer is not used to that. They're used to sitting down for that interrogation as opposed to that conversation that many agencies are beginning to move towards.
All right. So I'm going to ask sort of a difficult question here, because I think you and I would both agree that a strong value proposition for an independent agency is unique. In other words, it really is theirs. They didn't just pull it off the shelf and try to graft it onto the agency, right? It has to be in their blood. And so one of the dangers of talking about this is, if I say, give me two or three really cool value propositions that are killing it out in the marketplace, others might, rather than take that as inspiration, they might, you know, take it as an opportunity to shortcut a process that usually has to be internal. So rather than just give us like your favorite value proposition, here's what I'm going to ask you. What process do you think agency leadership needs to go through in order to arrive at a value proposition that works for them?
I think, like most organizations, it starts, you mentioned leadership, it starts from the top. That individual has to let the staff know what they're all about, what the agency is about, what the agency wants to achieve, what the agency wants the public, buying public, to know about their organization.
Uh-huh.
And I think they need to be more transparent with staff as well, and begin to help that staff person let them know what should we be all about. It's always nice when you start to formulate that in conjunction with your staff, because I think then you get greater buy-in.
All right. So what do you say to the agency principal who's had an agency that was founded in 1919, right? And
right.
They've been relying on some platitudes like, you know, trust, service, and integrity or something like that, right? Because it was in the Yellow Pages ad 25 years ago. So now he's saying, all right, Dan, you got my attention, and I understand that as a business, I need to stand out from the crowd. How do you suggest they go about developing their own unique value prop?
I think they need to do a SWOT analysis. And when I say SWOT, S-W-O-T, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, take a serious look at those strengths and figure out how can we model a value proposition based on what we feel we do well, mm-hmm. and make it sound like it's about the client. It can't be about the agency.
Got it.
It's got to be about the client. And I'm gonna repeat one right here that I heard, and I liked it because I thought it was honest, and I also thought it left the client a situation where they just could not say no.
Okay.
But it takes about 13 seconds to say.
Okay.
This young lady said, "I can't do what I do in 15 minutes. I'm going to need 20 to 25 minutes of your time. During this period of time, I'm going to make sure that everything you have at risk is adequately covered in the event of a loss. During this period, I'm going to prescribe coverages for you that are equal to or better than that I would prescribe to my family. Are you willing to give me time to do that?"
Got it. All right. Very well said. And clearly stands out from, say, 15%.
Yes.
Right? Okay. All right.
And it's honest.
So, staying along the thread of marketing itself, what do you see agencies doing these days, the ones that are successful, to get more organic quotes?
I think they are putting in hard and fast. The first thing they're doing is putting in a proactive referral program.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, agencies will tell me their number one source of new business is referrals, and I'll ask them, well, what is your referral program? Most of their referrals are passive. They get them because they've provided good service or somebody happened to mention them. However, I want them to have a proactive plan in place that they have put in on the table that generates additional referrals.
It sounds like you and I are talking to the same people, Dan.
I'm certain that we do.
We get more referrals from any place else. What's the program? Well, we don't have a program. How many do you get? Well, I don't really know how many we get. So,
I know. It's amazing. I always feel that a few of these things, if done differently, would generate vastly different
results. Well, you and I both know that they do. So share with us, if you would, what are some of the key elements that you like in a referral program?
I like any program that, one, recognizes the client for bringing folks to their agency or directing folks to their agency.
Right.
And, of course, you know, staying within the letters of the law, you know, if there are giveaways or gift cards or things that I've heard, drawings that they will do depending on state insurance departments. I also like ones that will take that a step further, and possibly anyone who sent in one over a period of time, and let's say quarterly, everyone who sent one into our agency, we're going to put in for a quarterly drawing for X. And again, utilizing those 4 to 6 proactive contacts to mention who that winner was. Take a picture of them at the agency receiving whatever that gift was, and continue to keep people attached to the agency and what goes on in the place where they're spending their hard-earned dollars.
Got it. All right. I have two final questions for you, Dan, okay?
Really?
One big one and one short one.
Yep.
So the bigger one is what cause I know you work individually with agencies. What do you like to see in a successful marketing plan?
Any successful marketing plan, they need to measure the results. We need to put a plan in place. We need to have checks and balances. We need to have people within our staff who are responsible for parts of those plans. I'm a huge fan of another thing. If you expect it, please find a way to inspect it.
Ah, what does that mean? Okay. Oh, okay. All right. So if that's a goal, you need a way to know whether or not you're achieving it. You have to have some way of measuring it. Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. Because when the plan and every single plan that we put in place may not necessarily work in your agency, we need to know that sooner than later so that we can scratch that plan, either revise it or move on to our next strategy.
Got it. All right.
But we certainly need to measure those things.
Okay. Anything else?
I would say that's what's key, because in so many agencies, they're not doing the level of tracking they should be, and they will either stay with a plan an inordinate amount of time, or they will bail on a plan. I've had agencies tell me, oh, yeah, we used to do that. And I said, how did it work? Oh, it worked real well. I said, well, why did you stop? Yeah, we don't even know.
Yeah, okay. All right. Heard that one before. Yeah, it worked so well, we stopped doing it. All right, so, Dan, I have another question for you.
So
the insurance industry, let's say, is streaming down the highway, down insurance highway at 65 miles an hour. And Dan King gets to put a billboard on the side of the highway. If there are too many words on it, nobody's going to be able to read it. But you want to deliver something that gets their attention and delivers a message that makes them think. What do you want to say?
Gosh, that's a tough one, because I got to admit, I have never been a huge proponent of billboards.
I know. I'm challenging you to take the Dan King message and to deliver it in a punch. What do you want this industry to wake up to?
A lot of it, I don't know if it can be captured on a billboard, but really getting that client in front of you and letting them know how important the right coverage is. But I would probably put something up there in large letters. We want to help you.
Yeah. Okay.
I think you've got to appeal to the individual because everyone needs assistance, wants assistance, regardless of what it is.
Uh-huh.
So I probably would go with something like that and see what we got from it.
Got it. I get the essence of the message. All right. would you say, Dan, in your experience, I mean, we know Flo's message and we know the Gecko's message. There are a lot of people in this country or in North America, and some insurance channels might be appropriate for some people, and some insurance channels are appropriate for other people. Would you say that there's a demographic that is best served by our channel, where we can, where we're not just saying 15 minutes and 15%, where we're really saying we're going to take care of you?
I really believe that every demographic would be served well by an independent agent once they got to understand that that independent agent was truly their advocate. So I think independent agents have to be very adamant about letting them know that they are there for them, and they provide one of the first things that's a huge plus for an independent agent, they provide choice. And
right.
Try to find a way to explain that that choice is not about shopping your insurance every year, but it is about making sure to put you in the program that best serves you and what you have at risk.
If
we can get away from using the price game, because that is not an independent agent's game,
right,
to win.
You and I, we see eye to eye on that one.
Totally. They can win the value game. They've got to make sure to continue to impress upon people the difference that they can make, can and will.
Dan, if people want to make contact with you, find out more about what you do, if they want to reach you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Certainly, they could reach me at my email address. It's a slightly longer one, but it's BIGSIX, then the numbers 4488 at gmail.com.
Got it. All right.
And I would welcome to speak to folks.
Got it. And of course, are you on LinkedIn?
Yes, I am.
All right.
I am on LinkedIn as well.
So they can reach out to you on LinkedIn as well. All
right.
Dan, as always, been a pleasure talking to you. I look forward to crossing our paths again in the industry somewhere.
Michael, I do as well. It's been a long time in coming, but I really enjoyed this.
Very good. All right. Thanks, Dan, and have a terrific day.
Do the same.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.